we're looking good.
Okay, great.
So if you're ready, we'll just get right down to it.
Yeah, I'm ready when you are.
All right, great. Let's start with your year of graduation and your major.
So I majored in music production and engineering, and my year of graduation was, I want to say, 2008, and I walked in 2009.
How does that work? You said graduated in 08 and walked in 09?
Yeah, so I started halfway through the year.
Okay.
So I started in the spring semester. So my last was that right actually? Graduated in 08, walked in 09? Yeah. Yeah, I guess so, huh? Yeah, so I finished my last semester was the end of 2008, and then I walked in spring of 2009.
Oh, right, so basically you went to the ceremony in 09, but you were done at the end of 08.
Basically, yes.
Got it.
Yeah,
so
it's...
you were MP&E, and...
Okay. Yep.
What was your principal instrument?
Guitar.
Guitar, cool. So, yeah. We'll get to your history later, but for now, tell us about your current job. What do you do?
Oop, I'm sorry. I have to. Sorry. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Are you getting any static on your end?
I was getting a little bit of static, but it's coming in okay now.
Okay. I couldn't tell if it was on my end or not. Sorry. Let me unplug these speakers. Okay. All right. Let's try that again. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Okay. Great. I think it might be the connection or something.
Okay.
okay. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm hearing that. Probably my end. Give me a sec. Oh yeah, that's alright. I think it's better. A connection was slightly loose here.
I think I lost you. Are you there?
I can hear you. Can you hear
me? Oh yeah. You just got a lot quieter.
Can you hear me better now?
I can.
Okay, good.
All right. Sorry. We'll get through this.
It's all good. All right, so let's try this again.
Okay.
So we'll get to your history later. But for now, tell us about your current job. What do you do?
So I'm a product manager at a company called the Dollar Shave Club.
Uh-huh.
And basically I work on our internal tools. So we have customer management software and marketing software that we build in-house with our team of engineers and designers. And so my job day-to-day is to manage those teams, basically work with the business owners, which are my, so to speak, stakeholders, our head of customer service and a director of marketing. And we work together. We create a roadmap for the year, for the next couple quarters, and I work with my team to basically build features, maintain the software, just kind of like run a small business within the business, kind of helping improve that side.
So you basically, I've heard the title software administrator. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, I guess that's one way to put it. Yeah, software administrator. It's very much like a people management job.
Go on.
You have to work with an awful lot of people. You have to be very communicative, and you have to deal with a lot of people's. How do I put it? Emotions, attitudes, personalities, egos.
And you said that you actually build the tools, so you're writing some computer code or doing the configuring and all that.
I'm actually not. I used to do that, but I actually have a team of engineers that do the building, do the coding.
So what's your specific responsibility then? Sorry, Fess.
So I'm like the business manager in that sense where I'm in charge of the teams, and I decide basically what we're going to build, when we're going to build it, how it's going to work.
Oh, got it.
Yeah, I end up making like all the decisions on how it's going to look and, you know, things like that.
Got it. No, actually, my wife works in software now that you mentioned. Yeah, they have a product manager.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
Of,
yeah.
You know, runs the whole process and allocates to who's going to do what.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely one of the responsibilities, and it's something that I had never even knew existed as a job until I started working at this company. I'd never even heard of the title before.
Got it. And you said Dollar Shave Club.
Yes.
That's like shaving your face in the morning, right?
Shaving your face in the morning. We sell hair products and shower products and skin products now, and it's turning into an entire grooming brand.
Gotcha.
I did start with shaving, though.
But you're sort of all on the software end. You don't have to really know anything about shaving products. I know you've picked up a thing or two by osmosis. Is that correct? Or?
Yeah. That's right. That knowledge definitely helps. But, yeah, I mean, my job is not making the physical products. It's making the digital products.
Sure. And how big's your team?
So that's a good question. I run kind of lean. Being on the internal side, I don't get the same resources as people that work on the customer-facing software.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd say my smaller team is about 4 people, and larger team is probably about 6.
Okay. You have 2 teams then.
I have 2 teams. I have 1 for the customer management software, and I have 1 for our email software, marketing software.
Gotcha. How big a company is Dollar Shave Club if you have 10 people working just on internal software?
Yeah. Our engineering team is about 45 people, and our entire company is about, what are we now, 200-ish?
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. That's good size. You know, we're a good medium-sized business. When I started a few years ago, we were about 32.
Oh, wow. Grown a lot.
Yeah, it's grown a lot in the last almost 3 years. It's incredible.
Gotcha. So, hey, would you mind describing a typical day, or if the days vary too much, a typical week at work into a greater detail? Like, what are you doing? And by the way, about how many hours do you work each week?
I'm probably about 50 hours a week.
Okay.
We still have very much of that like startup mentality. We don't have a lot of redundancy, but I mean, yeah, that's a good question. Day to day, yeah, it's hard. I would say probably week to week. I mean, the job varies so much. There's a lot of decks. So I do weekly decks for reporting for the CEO and other officers in the company, just so that they kind of know.
But what are decks?
A deck is like a PowerPoint presentation.
Okay.
And it's something that you would basically put together and you would email around like, hey guys, we have like, for example, we have like a product weekly deck. Like here's what's going on all the digital products we work on. And so everybody kind of compiles a list of slides to disseminate information to the top so that they know without having to come bug us.
Mm-hmm.
So I have that. I'll generally have design reviews, working with the designers on new tools that we might be building or updates to certain tools. So I might have 1 or 2 of those where we sit down and kind of sit with the designer and my UX designer and my engineer and like other project managers and all these people, and we'll kind of come to a consensus on like, okay, great, this is moving along really well, it's still on time, it's looking good, or no, don't like that, I don't think this is going to work because XYZ, let's go back, fix that up, and then, you know, come up with a new timeline of when we can finish the design. At the same time, we'll do the same thing with engineering, just kind of check in to see like how's the status of, you know, feature X that you're building, and then we'll go review those kind of things. I guess it depends on whether we're more in a build phase or a planning phase. On the planning phase side, I'll work with my UX designer and do a lot of research with our clients, which thankfully are.
Sorry, what's a UX designer?
Oh, sorry, that's a user experience designer.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so they're not necessarily a graphical designer, but they more kind of design workflows and systems and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
What needs to go on a page and kind of whereabouts should it be placed?
Okay.
So we'll do a lot of research together to kind of figure out what we need to do, how we need to do it. And there's road mapping. You know, every now and then I'll have like a road mapping session where we reevaluate what we're going to be doing over the next few weeks. Or maybe we will what am I trying to say? We'll check in on the roadmap with the stakeholders. Or it could be writing the most fun part of a product manager's job, user stories. And user stories are basically writing up all the criteria of a tool or a feature of saying like, okay, as a user, I'm a customer, I can go to the website and I can buy some shave butter, which is something that we sell. And then I'll go into all the details about all the different edge cases about going through the process of buying shea butter and describing how that was done, what's supposed to happen and what's not supposed to happen. And that way, that's kind of like putting a feature into writing so that it can be clearly communicated in a way that everybody can understand, across all teams, across design, UX, engineering QA. Right. And that's how we kind of, that's how we kind of annotate features and document features and all that. So, I mean, that's more on the planning side, and on the build side, it's more just like checking in, staying on top of things and then planning for the next planning. Yeah. There's a lot of planning. You constantly have to be thinking on your toes and shifting around and readjusting and a lot of compromising.
Me type of compromise in terms of what you like to see built versus what you have time to build.
Exactly. It's a very good lesson in learning how to compromise and learning how to come up with the most effective solution with the time and the people you got.
Interesting. So, yeah. Hey, I'm not going to ask about exactly what they pay you, but I am curious because you said you're a product manager and that you used to do software code. Do you know if product managers is sort of, is your pay like pretty comparable to that of an engineer, a little more, a little less? How does that shake out?
So I would say it depends on where you live. For example, if you're in the Bay Area, engineers get paid pretty much higher than about anybody else. So knowing how to do software development up in the Bay Area is fantastic pay-wise. Down here in Los Angeles, it's probably a little bit more even. I'd say I'm in the ballpark of an engineer at my level.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very nice. Mm-hmm. So another question I have for you is to do these interviews, you have to say that you enjoy what you're doing. Right? So I'd like to hear your words. You certainly sort of talked about very animated, but what is it exactly that you enjoy about your field of product management?
That's a good question. I really enjoy bringing things together. I mean, when you're working as a creative expert or an expert on the engineering side, I mean, there's a lot of creativity, there's a lot of execution, and that's a lot of fun. It's very fulfilling. But something that I've learned going into product management is that it's extremely fulfilling for myself to be the one that kind of ties it all together. Having a background in different areas, more on the artistic side and on the engineering side, it's nice to be able to communicate with those people and kind of work with them in order to bring a vision to life. It's actually a lot like being a producer, working in a studio and finding talent. A lot of just like working in the studio, there's a lot of wrangling cats and dealing with personalities and things like that. You have a vision and you work with these experts in their field to kind of bring that vision to life and to create a product that you can put out there that you hope people are going to love. And that's what I loved about music production and engineering at Berklee and being a musician. It's actually translated quite well into the role. And that was something I was really not prepared for. So in that aspect, I absolutely love the job.
Excellent. All right. Well, hey, let's take it back now to late 2008, earlier if you wish.
Sure.
And there you are, finishing up Berklee with your music production engineering degree. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you were not immediately thinking product manager or, you know, personal grooming tools or...
No, that was definitely not in my thought process.
So put us in the headspace you were at the time, and, you know, what were you thinking? What was your next step then?
Yeah, that is a good question.
We'll sort of go the whole way up to where you are now.
Okay, great. So I was very cautiously optimistic towards the end of my time. I mean, when I first got to Berklee, I decided that I'm going to be a guitar player, and I'm a fantastic guitar player, so I'm going to go to Berklee, and I'm going to get a degree, and I'm going to be a great musician and make a lot of money, and that's going to be my life.
Okay.
And then I get to, what's that?
I was like, okay, yep.
Yeah, sounds great.
Sounds like a lot of people who enter Berklee.
Uh-huh. And I get to Berklee, and then I realize, like, oh, shit, everybody's a better guitar player than me.
You and two-thirds of the other people at Berkeley.
Exactly. And there's not like 10 of them. There's thousands of them. So I'm like, okay, great. Well, what do I do now? And I had already, to get to this point, I'd already fought with my, you know, my dad and everything wanted me to follow a very traditional path. And then, no, I want to be an artist. I want to do music. And so, you know, he finally bought into it and supported me, which was wonderful. But when I got there, I was like, oh man, what am I going to do? So I've always been very much into computers, and I've always liked that aspect of music, the technology side. So when I learned about MP&E at Berkeley, I was like, oh, that sounds interesting. That sounds like that could be a lot of fun. So I applied my second semester, and I think you had to wait till your second semester to apply, and went through the interview process, and I ended up getting in. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. So now we're part of this like really cool like small group of people at Berkeley doing these fun things, working in these studios and learning how to make albums. Like, this is amazing. And for the next 3.5 years, it was like absolutely amazing. What an incredible major at that school. I mean, it was such a great experience. And towards the end, you know, the teachers would always hint about like, well, you know, it's going to be tough out there. We can't really tell you like you're not going to get a job and nobody's going to find work. But we just, you know, we need to kind of prepare you a little bit. Like, it's going to be tough. I'm like, okay, yeah, it's going to be tough, but we're in this major and we're doing really well. So, you know, maybe that's not going to apply to us. And yeah, I mean, towards the end, I was like, okay, time to maybe start finding a job. So the last, I think, couple summers, I would come out to Los Angeles and I would intern. One time I interned for somebody who was a singer-songwriter back in the 80s. And then the other...
Oh, care to share a name?
Her name was Roxanne Seaman.
Okay.
And she actually worked with a lot of... She worked with the internship program quite a bit. And so there were a lot of Berkeley interns that went through her.
Cool.
Yeah, so I did that. I also worked at a recording studio in L.A. called Chalice, which is a hip-hop studio. Which is funny because that's not really my thing, but it was fun to work there, fun to see all that.
Cool.
I'm like, okay, you know, I'm making a couple connections. I might have something lined up for when I'm back. But the last summer before I graduated, I met up with this guy. He actually came and spoke at Berkeley. His name was Carmen Rizzo, and he was a big guy in the electronic music space, and that was music I'm very much into.
Okay.
And so I was like, oh wow, this guy's amazing. So after the talk, I went up, spoke to him, got his contact information, and then for the next couple months before summer, I just bugged him like crazy to come out and work for him. I'm like, I'm going to LA. I want to work for you. And he's like, oh, well, that's really nice of you, but I've got somebody. Sorry. But let's stay in touch. And so I just hounded him every, I don't know, maybe like 3 weeks. I kept asking him, and then eventually he's like, you know what? My intern just left, so if you want – when you come here in the summer, come stop by, interview, and then we can see if we can work something out. So I did that, got to LA, met with him. Awesome. He had this little tiny studio. He was an independent.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was cool. And then I started working for him that summer. Everything was great. Went back to school, graduated, done. I'm like, great. I've got a job lined up. I'm going to go out to LA. I'm going to work for this guy. And I worked for him for about 2.5 years.
Okay, so what, it was a paid position.
It was not.
Oh.
Yes, that was a harsh reality. Yeah, it was not a paid position. I worked for Carmen for free for 2.5 years. In exchange, you know, the usual. Got experience, exposure, credits. I got to meet some very, very good friends that I'm still in touch with now, which is great. And the 2.5 years I worked for him, I had an absolutely incredible time.
Just curious, did you do stuff on the side to make money?
Or... I tried. I was very fortunate to have parents who could support me through that time.
Gotcha.
Otherwise, there's no way this would have been possible. Because I was at his studio 10 to 12 hours a day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, we lived at the studio. I mean, that was his office. And that's where I was all the time.
I've definitely heard... for, you know, stories. Would you believe, by the way, that so far MP&E, even though there aren't all that many of you at Berkeley, seems to be the second most common major of people who have these good non-music jobs?
Really?
Yeah.
You know, that's not that surprising, because I think the skills that it gives you, being a producer and the way they make you think on your feet and solve problems on the fly, really applies to a lot of jobs out there.
But I was going to say, I've heard stories similar of working for a studio for either very minimal or more often no money, but yeah. people often having all sorts of other, you know, walking dogs and doing other stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I tried to get side projects with people, and I mean, there's so much work here in LA, but most of it is free. Or it's like, hey, we want you to spend like 50 hours mixing this demo for us, and we're going to pay you $100. $200. And it's like, but you know, it's going to be great exposure because we're going to put your name on the CD insert. And it's like, oh, great. These guys are still making CDs. This sounds like a winner.
Gotcha.
And you know, you never know. Like you want to keep an open mind. And you want to work with as many people as possible and build up your network.
Of course. And every now and then something really does pan out for somebody.
Absolutely. It does. And you know, it's like the lottery. You're not gonna win if you don't play. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it is very much like the lottery, and very few people win.
Right. So you're out there for what, like 2009, 2010 into 2011.
Yeah. So we're working.
Which, but for what it's worth, was like the single worst the economy's been since before World War II.
Yeah, that didn't help things.
Yeah.
That definitely did, especially living in an expensive city like Los Angeles. That did not help things.
Right.
I mean, I remember the cost of living in Boston was very high, but it doesn't get any better when you go to LA, especially these days with rent and everything. It's so difficult.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so there's that forward too.
So, okay, so what's happening there? Because clearly you're not still working for free at a studio. So what sort of prompted that transition?
And I think we eventually just kind of hit that point where it was time for me to move on. Mm-hmm. I wasn't really, you know, I was working for him. Things were good. They started to, I don't want to say sour. They never soured, but they got a little stale after a while. The routine got a little stale, and I wasn't really doing anything. I wasn't really progressing. So I think we eventually kind of went our separate ways, and I went freelance. I was like, okay, I'm gonna figure this out. I've got some connections from him. They're going to introduce me to some people. I've got some other friends that I've met. Like, I'm going to give the freelance thing a shot and be like him. Because I've learned so much from him, I can do it too.
Okay.
And unfortunately, I didn't have the network that he had spent the last 25 years of his life building. So it was very, very difficult for me. I was able to do odd jobs here and there. I mean, I did some cool things. I worked with somebody on some music for like an independent film. Unfortunately ended up not getting released.
No.
Yeah, right. And it actually had some like big name actors in it. And then I had a buddy who was a composer over at Remote Control, Hans Zimmer's place. And I'd go down there every now and then, and I'd kind of help him with stuff, and he'd just throw me a bone every now and then. But you know, that never really went anywhere either. And, I guess I forgot to mention, when I was still working for this guy, Carmen, I kind of developed a little bit of a, web development sensibility and very, very small skill set. He had asked me to update his website. Mm-hmm. And so that was one of the things I kind of figured out as, you know, one of my things working for him. Like, okay, well, I'll learn how to update your website for you. And then when clients would come in, because he ran an independent record label as well, clients would come in, he's like, yeah, I'll give you guys the whole package. We'll set you up with the website and do the album artwork and all that kind of stuff.
And you were the website guy now.
I was the website guy. So yeah, one thing transitioned into another, and every client that came in is like, oh yeah, Lorna, build you a website, just throw him like $50. And I was
Ouch.
Like, yeah. Yeah, right? But I was happy to, because I mean, even though it was very, very little money, it was still a paid education, right?
Right.
I was making money to learn how to do this kind of stuff, which was great.
By the way, do you recall like how you learned to do the coding? I mean, I've heard people talk about like code school or just Googling stuff or Stack Overflow. Or do you recall how
there was? I would say it was mostly Googling and reading.
Okay.
I didn't take a course for it. I dabbled in programming when I was younger, mm-hmm. before any of the music stuff, and so I had a little bit of that kind of mindset already, kind of like learning how to break down syntax of languages and things like that. So. It wasn't like I was completely starting from scratch, but no, I didn't go to school for it.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and so it would build, and people would ask me for more and more elaborate things, and I'd just be like, yeah, I could totally do that for you. And in my mind, I'm just like, what the hell are you doing? They don't know how to do any of this stuff. So then I'd go home, and over the weekend I'd Google it and figure it out and make it happen. I mean, it was granted it was all very simple stuff, but I didn't know how to do it at the time.
Right, of course.
So yeah, so I should have mentioned that earlier. So that was also kind of one of the catalysts for kind of breaking away, was like, okay, well, I also have this web thing I can do now too. So kind of like a double threat. I can do the music and the websites, and things are going to be great.
Right.
Yeah, and, you know, until they weren't.
Until you just didn't get enough business.
No, I did not get enough business at all. And I was just chasing all the studio stuff, and I had like a gig at home, a rig at home where I would like mix and not really record. I did a couple things, but it was mostly just like a mixing studio at home, mixing rig. And yeah, I was chasing all this business, and they just didn't want to pay anything for it. And at the same time, because of the websites I'd done, I have these people chasing me wanting to pay me to do websites. And so it was, looking back, it was like, it's really messed up. I mean, I really wanted to do music. I really wanted to produce. I really wanted to mix. Like, that's what I wanted to do. But these people were just like knocking at my door, like, we've got money for you, please. So one day I finally, you know, I took a step back. I was like, what am I doing? And it took a couple weeks, I think, to come to terms with it, but I made a conscious decision, like, okay, I'm going to switch industries, and I'm going to pack up my stuff, and I'm going to redecorate my little studio, my little office, and turn it into a web design and development studio.
So still freelance.
Still freelance, but there was at least some money coming in.
And when you say website and web development, were you focusing, like, were you billing yourself as a website for your band, or was it just like your band, your dog food business, whatever's coming our way?
Anything that's coming my way. I was at that point, I'm like, wow, there's something to this. I can actually start making a little bit of money. I'm not going to turn anything away. I want business and I want to learn. And so anybody that would come to me, it's like, great, you want something built. Like, the more websites I can put out there, you know, the better. And then it's going to build up my portfolio, and then I can get more business, and it's going to turn into this thing. And yeah, I did a lot of websites for musician friends that I met through Carmen. Mm-hmm. And I was referred via word of mouth. I mean, we were all friends. We all liked each other. So everything was good. The money still was not good enough. I mean, I was still, you know, doing websites for like $500. And so it was, you know, I was scraping by.
And what, like 25 hours work or something?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Something like that. And so I kept doing that for a while, and then eventually I don't know, I was getting frustrated. Like, business just wasn't coming in like I wanted to. I had a
Does a while mean like a year? Or...
Oh, sorry. A while means maybe like 6 months.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe about 6 months. I'm like, I had a couple opportunities to get some larger projects with some companies around town, and they fell through. I'm just like, man, I don't know what I'm going to do. And funny enough, somebody that I went to Berkeley with, that I had one class with, I was friends with on Facebook, and he worked at a fashion company here in Los Angeles. And he posted a job posting saying, hey, I'm looking for a web designer and developer in Los Angeles if somebody wants to work in fashion. Send me your resume. I was like, okay, why not? So I put together a resume, I sent it to him, and then I went in to interview next week, and it was a job kind of like building and maintaining these couple websites for this fashion company in Los Angeles, and I ended up getting the job, and I started, and I was like, well, this is strange. I never thought I would be doing a 9-to-5, but here I am.
Hey, do you mind sharing about what they were paying you for that?
Yeah, sure. So the job, the title was lead developer / designer, something like that. And the salary was, at the time, it was $68.
It's not bad at all, and it's certainly a big improvement over what you'd been getting.
Oh, it was huge. It was my life changed overnight. I mean, yeah, you could definitely say it was an improvement for what I was making. I mean, I didn't have to eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and ramen all the time.
This is like the end of 2011, by the way.
That was no. When did I do that? 2012.
Okay.
Yeah, close. Yeah, it's 2012. That's right.
And did you? You said lead developer. So do you? Did you have, like, assistants or other people?
Nope. It was just me. It was me and this guy from Berkeley, who was my manager. Uh-huh. And we worked in a little warehouse, which was part of this big complex. And we ran the e-commerce operation for all the brands. So we had our own little warehouse where we did our fulfillment. We had a couple guys that worked in the warehouse that would pack and ship. And we had three customer service people in the office with us. And that was the entire operation for e-commerce in my company.
Gotcha.
And it was...
Well, it's cool. Yeah, those small companies, you have to learn to do a lot.
Yeah. Well, you know, the funny thing is the company was about 300 people. It's one of the largest denim manufacturers in the United States. Mm-hmm. They made a ton of money. But the e-commerce operation was very tiny because they primarily sold to stores like Nordstrom and Macy's, and that's where they made the majority of their business.
Gotcha.
They didn't really want to – they couldn't push e-commerce too much because they'd threaten their relationships with the retailers. So it was a very interesting situation where we were kind of – we wanted to do all these cool things, but we couldn't. We had to kind of keep a low profile.
That is funny.
Yeah, it was very interesting. It was, you know, very frustrating at times, but I mean, hey, I had a stable thing. I was making great money. It took me a while to adjust, but I was happy. And that was when like everything changed. I was like, wow, you know, having a 9-to-5, because when I was a musician and when I was at Berkeley, like, oh God, everybody with a 9-to-5 is like a sucker. They don't, you know, they don't know. They're missing out on life. They're not cool. Like, it's not the same. And now I look back, I'm like, ah, oh, man, I was an idiot. The hell was I thinking?
Right.
Because you don't realize, like, until you start making a little bit of money, you don't realize how important stuff like that really is. And, you know, if lifestyle is important to you and if financial security is important to you and all that kind of stuff and being able to eat. It really, really changes. Can really change your perspective.
Right. Absolutely. So, hey, you're not the fashion company anymore. So, how long were you there?
I was there for 11 months. Mm-hmm. They decided one day that there was some group of people that used to work at Amazon. They approached the CEO and they're like, "Hey, we know you've got your whole operation going, but we want to build a custom website for you, and we're not going to charge you anything. We're only going to charge you a percent of sales." And the CEO was like, "You know what? That is a fantastic idea. I like what I see. We're going to go ahead and shut down our internal e-commerce department."
Okay, then.
And replace them with you guys. So that happened, and I got called into the office one day, and they let me know. And I was just like, oh, my God, what is going to happen now? And they told me, like, well, you know, the transition is going to take a couple months. We'd love for you to stay on and help transition to the people that are going to take over your job.
Great.
And I was like, well, okay. I mean, it's money. I'm not just going to, you know, leave. So I told them I'd stay, but if I found something, then I would leave. And like, yeah, of course.
Of course. You start looking right away at that moment.
Oh, yeah. I went right back to my desk and started, like, you know, updating my resume and looking on all the job hunting sites and everything. And that was basically what I did for the rest of my time there.
Right. My wife works in software QA, and there definitely was a company where that she worked at like 6 years ago where they announced they were closing down in 2 months. And yeah, pretty much all anyone talked about was, you know, the resumes they'd sent out and who was hiring. And
yeah, of course. I mean, it's like a frenzy. Yeah. And it sucks. Nobody likes being in that position. It's not a good position to be in.
Right.
So
you said you were looking for jobs. Like, these are a lot of the online job sites, like, I don't know, Monster,
CyberCoders was a big one for me because I was an engineer or developer, whatever you want to call it. And that's actually what ended up generating some leads. So I was, I was looking around, and there were all kinds of recruiters contacting me. I'd never worked with recruiters before. I thought it was very like, I don't know, what kind of job are they going to put me in? I'm not going to be happy. How much money are they going to take? Like, I had no idea how it worked. And I was very wary. And then, I did a whole bunch of interviews. Like, people would send me to these weird businesses in downtown. I didn't really know what they did. And they were just trying to get people through the door to interview and just try and land as many jobs as possible. And I was just like, I don't know what's going on, but I'm not very happy with how things are going.
You did want to stay in L.A., though.
I did want to stay in L.A. Mm-hmm. I like living in L.A. a lot.
Cool.
And... yeah, eventually I met this recruiter at CyberCoders, And there were a couple positions. I did phone interviews. Nothing ended up working out. But one day she's like, "Hey, I got this posting for this company called Dollar Shave Club. Have you heard of it?" And I was like, "Oh yeah, they have that really funny video online. Yeah, that sounds interesting." She's like, "Yeah, they'd like to set up a phone screen with you if that's cool." I'm like, "Yeah, please." So I did the phone interview, and then they invited me in like the next week. Went in and God. Our interview process is so long. I was there for, I think, 6 hours. And
was this one of those interviews where they give you tests?
Yes. Yes, I did have tests, and that was very nerve-wracking because I'd never had a test before. In order to get my job at the fashion company, I just had to show them my portfolio. But now it's like, okay, how good of an engineer are you?
And I'm sorry, were you interviewing for another web development position?
Yeah, I was actually they were looking for an engineer, and they were looking for a senior engineer. And I was like, well, I've got lead on my title at this company, and I did these websites by myself, so yeah, I should be good enough to be senior. And but yeah, that's what I ended up interviewing for. So they're like, okay, we're going to give you code tests and things like that. A couple of them I totally bombed, and a couple I didn't. But the one thing I liked about the interview was that they were very much. It's like, well, as long as your code is competent, it's more about how communicative are you, how organized are you, can you be on time, can you be responsible? Like, that's really the difference between a regular engineer and a senior engineer, because code-wise, there isn't, worlds of difference. And I was like, oh.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and again, that depends on who you ask. Sure. Different people have different philosophies, but that happened to be the philosophy of that company. Mm-hmm. And... yeah, they ended up offering me the job at the end of my interview.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I was like, well, I'm not going to think about it. I'm going to say yes, and I'm going to go back to the office tomorrow and give them my 2 weeks. And that's exactly it.
Great.
And, they were not thrilled at the fashion company to see me do that because it was only 2-3 weeks after they told me they were going to shut down the department. They thought they'd get another month and a half out of me, but...
well, gee...
yeah.
Cry me a river, right?
Exactly. Sorry, guys. So, yeah, and then 2 weeks later, yeah, I mean, everything changed again. And I started working at Dollar Shave Club as a front-end engineer.
Front-end engineer meaning you're working on what the customers see. Or what your own people see, I guess.
Yeah. Well, at that point, I was going to work on the website.
Oh, right.
As an engineer, I was going to work on the website. Mm-hmm. And that actually ended up not lasting long. I got pulled into the product and design department, which was two people, product manager and designer.
Pastor, what made that happen? That seems a little bit unusual to be like, hey, that you're with us.
Yeah, I guess they had decided this before they hired me, but they wanted somebody to build prototypes.
Okay.
So that's what they basically took me for. So I guess it was a little bit of confusion. So I worked on the engineering team technically for one day, and then the next day they pulled me over to product and design. They're like, hey, you're still on the engineering team. You're an engineer, but you're going to work – instead of working on the website, you're going to work for us building high-fidelity, fully functional prototypes in code that we can iterate on our ideas with and test with so that we can then pass that along to engineering, and they already have something to build from.
Prototypes, like you make something that looks like the new website feature.
Yes.
But it's obviously very, very limited in functionality.
Well, generally prototypes are, but the ones that they wanted me to build had to do everything. So they basically were websites that were fully functional.
Wow, this is just a little confusing because it sounds like the company was building everything twice then.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit. A little bit.
Okay.
It was actually quite beneficial. I mean, we figured out a lot of stuff that even today we're still using. We're still using concepts that we figured out back then 2.5 years ago that we still haven't been able to build yet.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I mean, it was very much like, yes, we must have the best prototypes and we need to figure this stuff out now instead of going into engineering, because then if you figure out when it actually gets to the engineers, it becomes way more expensive. We don't really do that anymore.
Okay.
we don't have engineers building prototypes anymore, but at the time, we were like 32, 33 people. It was a nice luxury to have.
It's funny because it sounds almost like you were doing something like your previous job, where even though there were a lot of engineers, you were there on your own doing the
Yes.
whole thing.
Yeah, except here I had the support system of the engineering team, and so I could ask them questions. I mean, they wanted me to prototype in a specific language, JavaScript language that the website was built on, and I didn't know it. So I had to, the first couple of weeks, I had to learn it. And so the engineers were invaluable then. They would help me with all this stuff so I could get up to speed.
Gotcha.
So that was great. If I was by myself, I wouldn't have had that, and things may not have turned out the same.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So, how did you then switch over from building prototypes to product management?
So after doing it for about a year, I was, oh, no, not a year, almost a year and a half as an engineer. I started the conversation with like, okay, guys, this is great, but I would love to graduate to something else. I really like doing coding, but like once I had learned what my manager, so to speak, did, the guy I worked for was our head of product. Once I got to see what his job was and what he was responsible for, I became very interested. I was like, wow, it's like you're kind of running the show a little bit. This seems pretty cool. Like you work with engineering, you work with marketing, you come up with all these concepts, you execute, and you really drive the business forward. This is pretty exciting stuff. I didn't know that there were jobs specifically for this. And so I talked to him for a few months about potentially transitioning into that role. So then, after a year and a half, it was getting to that point where it's like, okay, let's see what we can do. So they gave me a project, which was our blog at the time, which wasn't really much. It didn't get any love, but it was a project that the company decided they wanted to revamp it. So that was kind of my test, was to be a product manager while also being the developer and to build a better blog. So I worked on that for maybe 2 months, and then yeah, they were happy with it, happy enough to allow me to switch over. So yeah, eventually they said, okay, we made the switch, and then I was a product manager.
And I think you said pay, that was sort of a lateral move.
Yes. Well, yeah, the pay was, I did get a bump, but yeah, I mean, it was basically a lateral move. I went from being a senior front-end engineer to a regular product manager.
Gotcha. But it was something you were interested in doing. It sounds like that was what drove it.
Very much so. I mean, the path as an engineer, if you're going to stay with a company, I mean, you can eventually become a director and VP, and you're always going to be working within engineering, and the highest level you can get to is CTO, which is a fantastic position.
Chief Technology Officer.
Exactly. But you have to love doing everything around technology all the time, every time. Like you aren't really supposed to dabble in the other things. Like other people have positions. Like you're not gonna get involved in marketing, all right? Or you're not gonna get involved on the creative aspect because you're the head of technology and that's your domain. But the cool thing about product is that you're on the business side and it is your business to be involved with all those different aspects. And you can have a wider range of paths when you get into product management. I mean, you can eventually become the CEO of a company. You can go into finance if that's your thing. You can go into operations. You can go into marketing if you happen to have that skill set. So, I mean, it's kind of an open-ended book. But with technology, I mean, unless you make a jump to a different part of the company, and kind of learn those skills as well, it's a little harder. You're a little bit more pigeonholed. But if that's what you want to do, then fantastic.
Right.
That just isn't what I necessarily wanted to do for the rest of my life.
Understood. So
Yeah.
you switched over, what was this, about a couple years ago?
That was a year and 9 months ago.
Okay, and here you are.
And here I am, and I'm still doing product management, and I'm still alive.
Excellent. Well, hey, let's move on to the third part of the interview.
Sure.
Third of three. So, my first question for you is, what, if anything, is your current relationship with music?
Ooh, well, I do like to listen to it. That's probably about it. I mean, I obviously I still have a love for music. That's never going to go anywhere. But I mean, it's kind of tough. I still have an appreciation for gear, which I kind of learned in production and engineering. I like good sound systems, and for better or for worse, definitely for worse for my bank account. that's something that I really appreciate. I like having that knowledge. But other than that, I mean, you know, I don't go to as many shows as I used to. I wish I would. I don't really have a good excuse why I don't. I think I'm just busy and tired all the time.
You said you work 50-hour weeks. That's a lot, and it's a very intellectually intensive job.
Yeah, it can be very stressful. So normally at the end of the day, I mean, I'll go out to dinner, have drinks, something local, but going to a show, like, I'll do it every now and then. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's about it. I don't really stay in touch with my music friends as much as I used to. Some of them have moved away. We just haven't had a reason to connect as much. But I would say my relationship with music now, I mean, it's like the soundtrack for – God, that sounds cheesy. It's the soundtrack for my life. But, yeah, I mean, I'm always listening to music, especially, you know, my commute to work and things like that when I'm working. And I really – still appreciate it, but yeah, that's kind of where it ends. I mean, I'll play guitar every now and then. I have a guitar at the office, and there are actually a lot of guitar players at work, which is very surprising. Very good. Yeah, and yeah, every now and then we'll do something like that. We'll just sit around and play for a few minutes, but that's kind of the extent of it.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah. All right, next question for you, and I heard a little bit of this come out before, but let's get the full answer. Is right, Berklee is, as you know, music school, gives that one degree, a bachelor's in music.
Mm-hmm.
But when you think back to your Berklee education, is there anything where you feel that Berklee did a particularly good job in preparing you for the career you have now? Like, you know, I'm glad I went to Berklee as opposed to, you know, liberal arts college or some other degree.
Yeah, you know, I am actually very glad. A lot of the skill set in MP&E specifically, I mean, yeah, you're right. Like I mentioned before, I mean, it really prepared me for the job that I have now, not knowing that this was the job I would have. And this may not be the job that I keep forever, but it really, I don't know. I mean, MP&E is tough. And you just have to get shit done basically. Right. I mean, it's like, I don't know how things have changed now. I know there are all these like great new studios and all this new equipment and everything, but when I was there were, you know, a few studios and time was very, very scarce. I'm sure that probably hasn't changed. And
I mean, they have new studios. Berklee student population also is a bit higher, so I feel like maybe some of the, you know, the pressure might be slightly off, but there's still a lot of pressure.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine. So yeah, I mean, it's like you have a project, you have to work in the studio to do it because it's on tape or we're using the DA88 machines and you can't do that kind of stuff at home. And it was just like, you got to get it done or else your grades are going to suffer. And that very much translated to life. It's like nobody's going to hold your hand. You're responsible for your own destiny. And when you have a job or if you're freelance or anything, I mean, you're only going to succeed if you're able to do the things that you know you need to do. So I would say the education that I got there was probably a little bit more helpful in my path than if I went somewhere and got a traditional degree in business or whatever, marketing, psychology, mm-hmm. something like that. It's really helped me adapt quite a bit. Being able to, I mean, I remember one of the exams, we had a final exam where one of the things was getting a microphone up and working so you can record into Pro Tools. And the teacher was a little sneaky, and he would plug in the microphone in the live room, but only halfway. So you'd look. Yeah, right? You'd look and you'd see that it's plugged in. You're like, okay, well, it must be plugged in, so everything's fine. You know, most people miss that one. It's like you actually have to go and, you know, check it, like unplug it, plug it back in. And he wouldn't tell you what was wrong. It's just like something's wrong or a few things are wrong. Figure it out. And if you don't figure it out, you're not going to get a very good grade. And the major was very much like that. And I think that those kind of skills in life are so much more, unless you're going into a super specific area like law or medicine or something like that. I mean, these kind of skills are so great for succeeding at what you do later, because it's not just like, you know, bullshitting your way through essays and, you know, writing in blue books and whatever and just interpreting everything. It's like you either do it or you don't. And that's so much of how the real world has worked out. I mean, you either do something or you don't. Nobody really cares about the excuses. And yeah, I think that major really hit that home. And it did nothing but help. I mean, a lot of people always ask me, like, oh, if you could go back and do it different, what would you change? I'm like, honestly, nothing.
Gotcha.
This was the path that I had to take to end up where I am now, and I have no regrets.
Well, that's excellent. But I do want to turn the question around now.
Yeah.
Because, right, Berklee gives that Bachelor of Music degree. You went to Berklee knowing that.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, when you look back at your Berklee education, is there anything where you feel like, you know, hey, would have been really useful to know this, Berklee could have taught it to me, and they didn't?
Mm.
Anything you wish that, you know, had been covered or covered more adequately? Might have positioned you a little bit better.
That is a good question. I want to say yes. I'm trying to think what that would be. I think one of the things in MP&E, because that's, I mean, where I have the most relevant experience, I guess.
Of course.
I mean, you know, music harmony classes, things like that, like they're great, but obviously didn't help in my career. But I would say one of the things that they could have done a better job, and they started to transition as I was going through it, but everything was very studio oriented, right? You're going to go in, you're going to be at this huge studio with this great big board and all this equipment and whatever, and it's going to be awesome. But then you go out in the real world and you see that people don't operate that way. People are running Pro Tools at home, and they've got all these little things set up in their room. Like they've got some foam padding, they've got these little tiny like halfway isolation booths or little semicircular things you can put around the microphone to kind of deaden the sound so it sounds like you're in a booth. And they've got all these plugins that they don't pay for. Those people are making records, and they're making records that A, make a lot of money, or they're famous artists and they're touring a lot. I think Berklee did not, or MP&E did not do us any favors by forcing us into the way of, like, the studio way. It's great information to have, but your chances of actually working in a big studio and making a living doing that and really enjoying that are so incredibly slim. And every year that gets smaller as studios downsize more and more.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, one thing I would have wished that they had taught us more, or at least taught us, is how to be a guerrilla engineer, I guess you could say. I know there was
Can you sort of define what that is?
Yeah, I mean, that's somebody that, and the guy that I worked with as well, I mean, he was like this. Like, you can take a laptop, an audio interface, and you can go make records, and you can put them out there and sell them, and you can go tour. You don't have to have, like, a huge home setup. You don't have to have a really nice studio. I mean, all that kind of stuff is really nice once you've kind of made your way a bit, but that stuff isn't really available to a lot of people.
You're saying, like, how to kind of cobble stuff together to do something good cheaply.
Yes. Because most people are not going to be writing in studios, not going to be recording in studios. They're going to be recording in their house, and that's going to, you know, if you're lucky enough to work with a lot of big people, like, you're going to do that kind of stuff, and that's what's going to end up on the record.
Okay.
Right? So that would have been nice. I mean, that was something I eventually learned after, how to do that kind of stuff. I mean, we would record stuff for movies and TV shows and video games at this guy's place. And he had, I mean, I remember the room was just not treated. He didn't have all this gear, whatever. Like, the professors at Berklee would have, like, freaked out if they saw how we were recording this stuff. But he was making money, and people were hiring him to do this work, and it was ending up in these things that millions of people would see.
Wow.
Right? And so it was really an eye-opener to me, like, oh, man, I wish I would have learned more of this kind of stuff at school. Like, they should have taught us how to be, like, you know, road warriors with an audio interface on our back and our laptop.
Fair enough. So, next question is, you know, took you a few years, but you found your career path and it's done, you know, sounds like you've been doing very well for yourself here. As I'm sure you can imagine, there are a lot of other Berklee graduates who have not yet found that path.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps other people in their last year at Berklee look out into the big scary world. So for either or both of those groups, do you have any advice?
Oh, man. Yeah, it's tough. I mean, obviously you never want to give up on your dream, what you really want to do. You always have to have passion for something. I mean, yeah, some people are going to be lucky and they're going to make a lot of money and maybe they'll get a couple Grammys or something and they'll have a great career. But you know, for every one person that happens to, there are 1,000 people that it doesn't. And I mean, I would say probably the best advice is to basically keep an open mind and stay hungry and never turn down an opportunity, even if you think it's something you don't want to pursue. For web development, for me, I mean, it was something that I didn't, it's like, ah, you know, I'll do it because I have to. In the very beginning, I wasn't very interested in it. And people would ask me to do these websites. It's like, well, I'd rather be working on these songs that I told people I'd work on. But some advice that was given to me at some point was like, look, don't fight it. Whatever opportunity comes your way, follow that path and see what happens. See where it takes you, because you never know. And you never know. It might take you back to music. I mean, it's really funny how things work out sometimes.
Sure. Sure. And now a variant on that question. Because your interview, when it goes up, will join many others in this giant index I have by career.
So yeah, I saw that.
You'll be there as, you know, computer product manager.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, most people listening to this interview are ones who perhaps are thinking about a possible career change and link, oh, computer product manager, I'll check that out.
Mm-hmm.
So if they checked it out, especially if they made it this far, they're presumably interested in, you know, oh, maybe I'll try this product manager thing. So for anybody interested into getting into that field, do you have any specific tips?
Ooh, yeah, that's a good question.
Like, how do you break into – you're a Berklee grad. How do you break into this field?
Well, that is a good question. The cynic side of me says any good job is about who you know. But not everybody has connections. I definitely didn't. I lucked out.
You didn't know these people in product management.
No, I mean, that was something that I kind of found as I was just looking. And I mean, I got lucky because I got into a company as something else and transitioned. And that is always one path. You can always go into a company at something that they'll hire you for and express interest and make friends with people who do product management in that company, learn about the job. And if, you know, if they like you and if you're competent, if they feel you're competent, when they are looking to hire, they're going to hopefully look to hire internally first.
Hey, by the way, because you do have, you know, obviously those technical coding skills. Is that pretty standard for product managers? I mean, I could definitely see it being a benefit that you're going to have a better idea what you're talking about in terms of what's doable and not.
Yeah, that's a good point too. Having a very diverse skill set is very highly desired. So is the ability to self-educate. Knowing that you can throw somebody into a situation and they're going to figure it out. I mean, not just for product management, it's so good for so many roles. But yes, you're right. I mean, engineering is a good background to have. A lot of product managers come from engineering. But a lot of product managers also come from business backgrounds. About half the people on my team have MBAs. Mm-hmm. And the other place that you see a lot of product managers come from is design. There are a lot of ex-designers that have moved into product management.
Okay.
So, yeah, you know, as long as you're somewhat of a generalist, but if you have a strength in one of those three disciplines, product management can be great for you. But yeah, I mean, thinking back on what I said, that's probably the best advice I could give somebody that doesn't already have the connections to get into the role would be find a company that has a product management team that you really like what they do, and get your foot in the door as anything you can and find a way to transition internally, because I mean, being on the inside for a while, it's cheaper to hire internally than to go through a recruiter. And if people already know you and like you, then why would they take a chance on somebody they don't know and they don't know if they'll like? It really, really increases your chances. I mean, that's something we do at the company. We hire from our customer service department all the time.
Well, I'm hearing another little piece of implicit advice there in what you just said, which is not just get yourself hired, but make yourself popular and well-liked and respected once you're there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, so much of career progression is just being a likable person. People want to – they want to like to be around you. They need to like to be around you. You have to be pleasant. I mean, nobody wants to be around somebody they don't like. 10 hours a day, 12 hours a day. I mean, yeah, they might have an opening, but if, you know, so-and-so's all grumpy and like negative all the time and just, you know, doesn't show up to work on time or not very organized or whatever, like, yeah, I mean, they're going to look externally. But if you're somebody that's, you know, you don't necessarily have to be popular, but people need to know who you are. They need to like you. And if they do, they'll give you a shot.
Cool.
For sure. All right.
I have one last question for you.
Sure.
Which is, you have the mic, as they say, and you're being recorded. So is there anything we missed or anything else you'd like to say?
Huh. I want to say probably not. I think we definitely covered a lot. Yeah. I don't think I have any like golden nuggets of wisdom to drop.
Perfectly fine. I'll take it as a compliment, I guess.
Yeah, you did a good job teasing it all out.
All right. Well, hey, Lord, I really enjoyed this conversation.
Likewise.
It's been a lot of fun. It sounds like you've done really well for yourself, and hopefully some folks will be really inspired hearing this.
Absolutely. And also, I mean, you know, I don't know if you're going to put my contact info up or anything like that. But if anybody ever wants to reach out to me and, you know, if they have questions or they want advice or anything like that, I'm always happy to chat with anybody.
Sure. Usually I put in a link to somebody's LinkedIn profile.
Okay.
If you're good having your email up there, I could do that too.
Yeah, but I'm fine with that.
Okay.
I'm not very good with LinkedIn, so.
All right. I'll do that then. That's very generous of you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, of course.
Speak of email, look for a message from me in the very near future.
Will do.
And best of luck to you.
Well, thank you, Kevin. Really appreciated it.
All right. Yeah, thank you. We'll catch you later then.
Yeah, happy Labor Day.
You too. Bye now.
Thanks. Bye.